8th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, where we revisit great movies, in this case, great movies, from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name's Luigi Mario.
My name's Mario Luigi.
No, it's Mario Mario. They're the Mario brothers.
Hey, so is this anyone's
Do you know why I'm Luigi and you're Mario? Because I'm taller.
Oh. I thought you were going to say because...
And you're
I'm Bob
fatter.
Hoskins. Yeah. Or you're more Latino in this particular case.
I wear my green hat backwards.
This is no one's favorite film, right?
Certainly not.
Okay, cool.
Certainly not.
So we're really sticking to the format
we're
of
back
our
in
podcast.
This zone.
Yeah, great. We were a little
after
loose.
After playing Polite last time, I feel like this is a good movie to
trash on.
To go a little bit off track.
I hope it's awesome. I can't imagine it's true, but I've never seen it.
You've never seen it?
No.
Oh, shit. I wanted to bring, because I said at the end of the podcast, which is true, that I've never seen the movie, and I don't know how it happened, but I have action figures of the movie Mario and the movie Luigi, which is to say I own toy of John Leguizamo and a toy of Bob Hoskins.
It's pretty random.
Which I think is incredible.
You have a Bob Hoskins from Roger Rabbit.
They didn't make one, I don't think.
They just made Roger Rabbit. And
yeah, they
Rabbit
just made
stuff.
They made like the cartoons, and they made like Judge Doom. I have all that stuff, but yeah. I've never owned an Eddie Valiant. But like my toy shelf is incredible, and I know we talked about this on Dick Tracy. And it's not like I have a perverse collection, intentionally perverse collection of actors, but like I own Warren Beatty, Bob Hoskins. I'm looking at Al Pacino. I'm looking at Dustin Hoffman.
You know, like, standard comic book heroes.
Yes. Yeah. I remember somebody once said that they thought it was amazing that they made a full series of black hole toys. So someone owns a toy of Ernest Borgnine. And I just want that to, like, complete the collection.
That's great.
But that's my only connection to this movie, man. I never owned a Nintendo.
Here's two things I want to talk about. One is that I was obsessed with Nintendo and Super Mario Brothers. The Wizard was an enormous... film
oh fuck! I totally forgot that you're the Louisiana Wizard.
Oh, buddy!
Holy
Let's get into
shit!
This. That's one thing. The other thing I want to talk about is this is the first—not the first, but like in one of those waves of trying to convert.
Oh, there's
existing,
Johnny Depp
and also
Edward
Johnny Depp, existing material into film. So now we're in a phase of like Lego Movie happens, and even looser ideas have been made into major motion pictures. This was a fairly straightforward cultural hit. Everyone knew Super Mario Brothers. Seemed like a kind of a slam dunk, probably.
Right.
They cast pretty big actors at the time. Not huge, but like, well, you know, recognizable actors.
Sure.
And it just tanked. And I want to know why it tanked. I'm assuming it's the script.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, it must be. I also am assuming it's a terrible film. I mean, it just, that's the rep. Like, of course it is.
Yeah,
like, obviously it is. But what you said is interesting because it's not like, you know, they've actually never really solved this video game to film thing.
Fighter had the problem.
Street Fighter didn't work. Mortal Kombat had a sequel, but, you know, like, who fucking cares about Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
And I know that movie has its fans. But, the most successful, probably Resident Evil?
Yeah.
Like, Resident Evil had 6 or 7 movies, and I know those have their odd fans. But, like, the films of video games have never been a thing that, like...
And what
people
I wonder
all along, like ever since, and Mario was probably the first.
Yeah, I think so. And they're gonna have a Tetris movie and whatever that's gonna come out at some point. And it's probably gonna suck. But there. I was thinking about this on the way over here, and the Lego Movie I think works because it's very clever and it's very smart. But there's also no existing narrative that they have to hold on to, and a lot of the video game narratives are instinctively and inherently scrolling, for lack of a better word, right? It's just it's a series of very small obstacles you have to overcome to face a big villain. And imposing fun or modern gags onto an existing boring narrative that works for a video game probably is a bit of a narrative problem.
I suspect they don't do... this is an interesting topic, and I want to get into it after we've seen the film, but like, how much of this movie adheres to what we now know as like, there's kind of a formula for fan service. Like, they've kind of figured it out where, you know, in the reboots of other movies and in the comic book shit, they kind of know how to, like, please geeks, you know, about this shit. They know what to include. They claim to be fans in this very overt, kind of cynical, in my opinion, way. And they're like, yeah, like, we just had to put this thing in there because the people who know are going to fucking love it. But they had not figured that out when they made Mario. Correct. They were just like, this is a thing that makes money and it's popular, so we have to do the movie treatment. And they applied movies to the video game.
Exactly,
so,
right.
So I think that's probably where this goes totally haywire. Because
I think that's it.
There's nothing, I'm sure they aren't, you're right, there's nothing to adapt. You know, I don't even know, like in the, this is a weird question. In the video game, is he a plumber? I guess because he goes down tubes?
Yeah, he's a plumber.
So he's a plumber.
Yeah, he holds
but
a wrench.
When they started Donkey Kong and Mario came to existence, was he a plumber?
Yes, I think so. I remember, I've read the backstory of this, but it was years ago when I cared. So I don't know what the answer is now. But right. there's a real interesting origin story to this whole Mario
character. So a plumber, so here's what they have. Can we play a game before we do this, before we go watch the movie? Let's say this is what you have. You know Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, he's a plumber with a brother, also a plumber, who has to save, who goes to castles to save a princess and fights walking mushroom heads.
Yeah, and turtles.
And he can throw fireballs.
Yeah.
How do you make that a movie?
Well, here's the thing is...
Do you do the Lego thing?
Here's the thing. I think that they were also, the screenwriters, given the stipulation that it should happen in modern day. Am I wrong about that?
I assume. Is Super Mario Brothers set in the past?
No. No, I'm saying, well, it's set in a timeless kingdom.
Right.
But I'm saying for the film, I think the screenwriters, I'm guessing, were told, hey, wouldn't it be funny if the Mario Brothers lived in... Am I wrong in thinking this is like a modern... It's pitched in the modern day, right?
I assume you're right.
That feels like an extra fucking hurdle to overcome.
I assume that they... But when I say that they applied movies, it's like, okay, so these regular plumber brothers get in an adventure that they don't mean to get into, and they get, like, rocket boots or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I only know the rocket boots thing because John Leguizamo toy is wearing some.
I think that the problem here would be that they were probably playing to video games. I think there's probably an interesting story set in Manhattan with these two plumber brothers who... That's a weird phrase to say, plumber brothers. Plumber brothers. Yeah. They have to go fight this extraterrestrial thing that kind of comes into Manhattan.
You're right. I forgot. There's a dinosaur.
Bowser.
Koopa.
No, King Koopa and Bowser. Like, there's a
Are they the same guy?
There's Koopa, which is like the Koopa Troopers. And then Bowser's, I think, above King Koopa.
Bowser beats King Koopa?
I think so. Okay. Is that wrong, guys?
I don't know.
Someone tell us.
Let's find out. The movie, I'm sure, gets all of this.
Yeah, but there's a story in there that seems fine if you ground it and make it interesting. But I think they're playing video game characters in the film. Am I wrong? Who knows?
I don't think so.
I think what I mean by that is I think they're playing overdone yoinks, Jacques, papow.
I don't think so.
They're playing it straight.
That's my guess. But I don't know.
Question for you. Has John Leguizamo ever played anything straight? He's a kind of a big actor guy.
Yeah, but I mean, he can be great. He's great in...
I think he's fantastic, but I don't know if...
What's he great in? He's great in... he's great in Summer Sam. He's great in... What's that movie?
I like him in Too Wong Fu, to be honest.
Oh, he was great in John Wick 1.
I didn't see
He was very briefly in it. He's great. I think he's a great actor.
I know. I'm not trashing on John Leguizamo.
Stop being mean to Johnny.
But I think I think these are over the top performances. I bet you.
I'm not gonna like take that bet, but I bet the opposite.
Okay. Well, then you took the bet.
I guess so. What are we betting?
I don't know. Something.
Okay.
We'll bet one of your action figures.
Oh.
I wanted to mention one thing real quickly. We can pitch some ideas for this movie if you want. That sounds like a fun challenge. But,
sure.
Think about what was around this time period and what didn't get made into a movie, which seems inevitable. Castlevania would have been a fucking cool movie.
There's never been a Zelda movie.
Metroid would have been awesome.
Hey, you remember? But this is also, it is, we should talk about this because this is like early 90s, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is 90, what, 3 or something?
I don't know.
92, 93. My guess is. So Hoskins gets the gig because he was in Roger Rabbit, mm-hmm. obviously. And Leguizamo because I don't know why, but he just gets the job. This comes out at the same time that I was buying, like, even though I didn't own a Nintendo, I bought Nintendo cereal, and like,
what?
Yeah, there is a Nintendo cereal. Nintendo, it's a cereal now. Nintendo, it's a cereal. Wow,
that's and good.
Half of it was
I never saw that commercial.
The box was split, and half of the box was in a plastic bag of Mario cereal, and half was in a plastic bag of Link cereal, of Zelda cereal, I didn't like the Link cereal because I didn't like Zelda.
I wasn't allowed to have sugary cereals as a child.
Oh, I had a lot.
Yeah, I
loved
it.
I was a real sucker for cereal commercials.
I didn't even know they existed.
Loved them.
So
they were trying. So there was a time when Nintendo, you know, the corporation was trying to make this a thing, and it just seems to have it seemed to have failed.
It feels to like cross the over. First sort of, and I know there was commercialization. We talked about this in terms of you know, maybe Short Circuit was a episode where we talked about the burgeoning commercialization of things and action figures and toys and stuff like that, or the first Batman or whatever. But this is, I think, a strong salvo in terms of taking existing properties, making them into serials, games, movies, trying to diversify the properties that were already popular. And this is a big wash. And I don't think Nintendo really tried much after that.
You're actually right. This is kind of a... This really is kind of the beginning of that. Yeah, of trying to turn something that's not a movie, not a book, you know, into
really
another
a narrative.
Form of media. Not even... Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Not even a narrative into a film. And it's the first of many times that failed. But...
You know, I don't think
does that make it interesting? I don't know.
I think it does. And I'm interested to see how it fails. But also, there's other ones that seem... This is the problem, man. When people try to take non-existent plots and adapt them in a way that is for the fans, I think they miss the boat. And I wonder if this is just too literal of an adaptation.
I bet the opposite. I bet they didn't give a fuck about what it was. Mm. Yeah, no, it's not free-flowing. I bet they tried to pin it down to a really stupid movie story.
Oh, right.
And they're like,
just take
this
these characters,
hero's journey,
put them in.
They got to fight this guy, yeah, and there's some dumb references to princesses, and like there's maybe a tube or something. But I bet it sucks on a movie level.
I
bet it's a shitty fucking movie.
Yeah, I bet you're right, actually. I bet you're right, and I wonder if the references are just crammed in, like, here's a flower that makes me feel stronger or something. I wonder
I'm curious
thing.
About that too. I really like. I'm very honestly. I'm curious to see if they
eat
throw
mushrooms.
Fireballs or eat mushrooms. Surely they'll eat a mushroom.
Yeah,
surely
right? They have to.
Right? This is a very bad episode that we're hosting because like we have zero familiarity with this thing. Nor do I care.
Yeah, so. I do care though on a deep level about Nintendo. 8-bit Nintendo was my
okay. Can
babysitter.
You tell that story?
Sure.
Can you just explain
before,
why you're the Louisiana Wizard?
Yeah, I was a Louisiana Nintendo state champion. when I was in like the sixth grade or something, and this there was three rounds, and then I went to nationals and got put into a game I had never played before. Is my reasoning for why I failed so
what
badly.
Was the game?
I don't remember because I never played it. I just quit. I was like, this is too much. This game sucks. But I know the final one was the finals of the state championship was completing a board of Super Mario 3, a la the Wizard.
Right.
And then it was a round of Q-Bert, a round of one of those race car games, I forget which one, and then the final round was Tetris, and then you racked up as many points when you got to the final round as you could, and I was very good at Tetris, so
wow.
It was great. But I used to play, I had a list in my bedroom of all the games I had beaten. I would go, we come full circle, because I told this story on Roger Rabbit. Roger Rabbit was the one that really stuck with me.
Because you couldn't, that's right, so that episode has since been deleted,
okay.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
so
retell it.
I had a list of like, you know, a couple hundred games. I'd go rent a game at the Blockbuster, or the Video Hut, as it was called. And I would just play it all day and beat it and then return it and get a new game. And I just became obsessed with trying to figure out how video games worked and how to beat them and like what it took to beat them. And but Mario was one I kept coming back to just because scrolling two-dimensional action was the most interesting to my brain. So where you had to jump up walls and like Metroid and even Donkey Kong, that wasn't as interesting to me. Like scrolling left to right. Moving like that was interesting to me.
You know what I completely and I'm sorry to interrupt. That's,
that was it, really.
Well, I just totally forgot. I did have a Game Boy, and I played the fuck out of that Mario, and I played it like crazy. And I remember the feeling. Let's talk about this because I do have a point of reference for this. I remember the feeling of being 8 years old and getting like I remember like this is a very vivid childhood memory of getting of knowing I was going too far. I was playing longer than I was supposed to on the Game Boy because I was really into Mario and getting to the final boss named Tatanga and like just the thrill and like adrenaline of seeing the boss and knowing that's the final boss and my mom coming in pissed and me being so high on like having gotten that far, at that being like great, mom, I saw Tatanga, like I got to Tatanga. Another story, real quick.
yeah,
it's all flooding back now.
I like it,
dude. Once I was playing, I think Mario or at least some Nintendo game, and it very well may have been Mario at my cousin's house. And I'd been playing for a very long time, and I did not play much. I didn't play any video games. And once in a while, when I was at a friend's house or my cousin's house, I'd play the shit out of it. And so I was playing a lot, and I was around the same age, 6, 7 or so, so late 80s. And it was time to go. And my uncle comes out, and he was like saying goodbye, And for no reason at all, I full on punched him in the nuts as hard as I possibly could. And it was always, that was, I think, more than anything, great, the reason I never owned a video game system.
Yeah.
Because my parents were like, what the fuck are you doing?
That made you very violent.
I hit him so hard. Great. Square in the ball.
Yeah, good.
With, like, just out of my mind on video game insanity.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
I get it. That happens to us, yeah, man. I really
thanks,
think,
Mario.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mario, for ruining the lives of that poor
and
man.
And he never had children again.
Yeah, I really think that this was my first introduction to something that would become prevalent in the rest of my life, which is a real affinity for sort of incremental reward systems.
Mm-hmm.
So like this right, very human thing that humans are by nature problem solvers, and it's innate in us. It gives us pleasure to solve small problems. But to build a system that's a slot machine, basically, which is incremental reward systems trying to do certain things in certain combinations that require a modicum of skill,
right,
that gets more challenging, is just built for my reptile brain. Like, I love that. And it's shown itself in other ways throughout my life in terms of the way I structure my writing day sometimes, or like the way I go about, you know, having to complete a task. Incremental reward systems is how my brain works. and I don't know if it's I don't know if correlation implies causation here, but right, certainly my affinity for video games and a specific type of video games, of which Mario is a great example. I don't know if they sort of fed each other or if I gravitated
which one
towards
fed which,
one because
yeah,
of the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it really was like a huge part of my childhood. And there were certain games I would return to for the soothing quality of them. Like, playing Mario was like a soothing thing for me. Tetris was a soothing thing for me. Other games weren't. They were challenging. They were fun. But after a certain amount of time, it just became like something that I would go to sort of relax my brain and do. I do want to say I never was interested in any way as Mario with Mario as a character. So his spin-off games he would play, Mario's in like this game Dr. Mario, which is like a Tetris ripoff or whatever. Those games never interested me, and Mario as a personality I gave zero thought to. It could have been any figure doing anything in that order, in that sort of scrolling two-dimensional way, that would have brought me the same pleasure.
Right.
I had no connection to Mario or Luigi.
But Mario happened to be a pretty awesome, great classic game. Like, it did it right. Like, there are scroller games that suck that, you know, are no fun to play because they're either too repetitive or they're just not creative or something.
Yeah,
I mean,
Mario's
there is
a great
I will say, like, about Mario the game, it is a pretty fantastic collection of odd elements. Like, somehow the synthesis of that
game
is pretty cool. I know it's very Japanese, but it's
that way,
but maybe there's something to this about like putting what is obviously a Japanese kind of creativity into an American market and not knowing what to do with those elements when you have to make an American film.
That's a great thing. Yeah, that's interesting.
Because they're terribly abstract, and if you just try to lock them into the American machine of filmmaking, no way does that work.
Yeah. I'm interested by that, and also the idea as a kid of going into a situation. And if I hit that block, what happens? And if I push that thing, what happens?
Right.
For me, at that age, there was nothing else like that where I got to go in and just try to sort it out with no – and I hated the guides that told you how to play games.
Right.
We didn't have the internet back then because I'm old. But they had this guide you could buy that would tell you how to beat games. And I they made me so mad when kids would get those or bring them to school. I was like, get that shit out of here. I want to sort it out. What are you doing with this cheat code bullshit, Contra motherfucking? Yeah. Get it out.
I was always confused by games where that was necessary. Like you can't fatality in Mortal Kombat unless you know the cheat code. And that always confused me.
Yeah,
I was like, you can't figure that shit out. You can't figure out like 99 different combos to take someone's spine out.
Yeah.
So why is that in the game? Like,
yeah,
what's
I don't
the fun
know.
Of
I never gravitated towards those games as much. Scrolling
anyway,
to
we're
TV
getting
is
a little bit off track.
Okay, so we're going to watch this great movie.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. I expect to love it.
Let's give it a try.
What a lousy kingdom. Ever since Koopa took over. And you, Koopa, you're a lousy leader.
One thing I cannot stand is naysaying. Simon, de-evolve him now.
De-evolve. Cretaceous.
Our old king! You tried to get rid of him, but the king is everywhere! You can't get rid of him!
See you later, alligator.
Ever!
Why'd you do that to me?
No. Not now. What single-cell organism did you evolve from?
Tyrannosaurus Rex, the Lizard King. Thank you very much.
We're back.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bop.
Ooh, I like it. Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
Let's put this in context.
Yeah.
We meant to watch. We recorded the intro. We watched the movie right away, and we meant to record right after. Extenuating circumstances occurred. We both had to delay. It's now almost like 5 days later, 4 or 5 days later.
Yeah, 4 days later.
And you might think this would be a liability, but here's what I pose to you.
Uh-huh.
This is why I'm excited.
I'm excited you're smiling because I'm also smiling.
I have a couple things happened in those 4 days. The most important one of which is I wanted to know how much of this movie stays. Like what resonates days later from that extraordinarily impactful, like powerful experience. Because if we'd recorded this after, I don't know that we'd have been able to make coherent sentences.
I'm happy we waited because I went down the deepest rabbit hole.
Did you go down the same rabbit hole as me?
I don't know, man.
Is it about Terry Runte?
No, I went down... I've been down multiple rabbit holes.
Does Terry Runte mean anything to you?
No.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No.
This is the best.
Okay,
this
good.
Might be the best episode
okay,
we've ever
I'm really
recorded.
Excited to have this conversation so much. So I went down, I watched 3 different 30-minute videos. I've read 10 articles, long-form articles, like long-read articles,
what?
Like 20, 30,000-word articles. I got obsessed with the movie. I got obsessed
Holy
with the movie.
Holy shit.
Who's Terry Runte?
Well, do you want to start there?
Let's.
It's
yeah.
insane.
Yeah.
This is
there.
The most. Oh, all right, let's begin here, but don't lose anything
so
that you have.
Listen, I'm obsessed with the film. I've been thinking about it nonstop. Well, here's what let me set some parameters for the back end of this
Please.
Conversation, is that these things exist in the world. I don't want to just regurgitate them to our listeners.
Yeah.
I do want to look at it through the lens of our podcast.
Yeah.
Let's set some parameters that there's certain things that just need to be said, like the part of Mario was offered to Dustin Hoffman.
And, no fucking way.
Yes, first, because he was a big star coming off of Rain Man. He accepted the part. The producers turned him down.
What?
Wait. Then the part was offered to Danny DeVito, who turned it down. Then the part was offered for $5 million to Tom Hanks, who accepted the part. Everyone approved it.
Of Mario?
Yes, of Mario. And then they turned him down because he wasn't a big enough star. And then they went with Bob Hoskins, fresh off of Who Framed Roger
Wait
Rabbit.
A fucking minute.
Go on with Terry Runte. I got loads of this shit queued up. I'm obsessed with the way this movie was written.
Well, this thing that I'm about to drop on the show is pretty intense. It's pretty extreme. So as long as you feel secure that you can return to all of this madness.
I went down
one rabbit hole and it was this.
I'll be obsessed with this movie for months.
Fantastic. Here's the story of Terry Runte.
Yeah.
So there are 3 credited writers on this film. One of them.
Okay, then I do know this guy.
You
which
do know
one?
This.
Well, which? Because I know all 9 writers on the movie.
What?
Yeah.
Just let me tell this story.
Okay, good.
And if you know it, great.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to hazard to guess most people listening to this don't know this story. I didn't know it.
This is fucking great.
So one of them is Ed Solomon, who wrote Men in Black and Bill and Ted. He's obviously a strong writer, but credited ahead of him is a writing team, Terry Runte and somebody else. And I don't. Parker Bennett.
The ones the directors from Chicago. The ones the directors.
The guys from Chicago.
Yeah.
Correct. So Terry Runte was. There's a bunch of articles about this from the era. I can't seem to find a great footprint for this in like contemporary article wise. These guys only ever had 2 produced films. One was Some Dumb Thing, and then Mario, Super Mario Brothers, and. As after Super Mario Brothers, and after it was a failure, their last film was the other film they did was a failure too. Terry Runte, who is known in his circle at the time as a larger than life crazy guy who like made up this, I don't even think it was his real name. He like decided at some
what?
Point to start wearing berets and speaking with a fake French accent. And he was like part of a Chicago sort of writer, maybe comedy scene. And he would spend hundreds of dollars. He lived hand to mouth on his paychecks from writer work. And he'd buy like $1 zillion shoes. And always with the ladies, you know, he was like a gadabout town guy, like all of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so after Mario Brothers, and they were a writing team, and they had been together as a writing team from, I don't know, like college or something. So there's an interesting thing that I'm working up to here, which is regarding us as a writing team. It's important for us to remember this, and that the Mario Brothers are a team. So Terry Runte...
By the way, I should tell the listeners, Super Mario Brothers movie is crazy awesome. Okay, Caitlin, go on. just so you know where we're going with this.
This is all a fucking super derail, this beginning of the show. So great. Terry Runté has decides he wants to go research a new film that he wants to write, which is partly about him being a ladies' man and like going and like sleeping with all these people in like the Caribbean or something or somewhere like that. And I'm gonna awesome. Get I'm gonna get so many details wrong.
No, I know none of this. This is
I'm gonna
awesome.
Get so many details
all
wrong.
All I have is a picture. During one of the documentaries I watched about the film, one of the many, there's a picture of Bennett and Terry Runté, I guess. Well, I didn't know his name at the time, but he's got a beret on in the picture.
When there
you
go.
Said that, it made me
there
so happy.
Go. And by the way, I'm looking at Wikipedia, and I would like to click Terry Runté right now, and I can't. He doesn't even have a Wikipedia article. And given what I'm about to say, that's fucking crazy.
Oh, give it to me.
So he goes to somewhere like the Caribbean or the Bahamas or Jamaica. I don't know which, but one of those sort right. of sort of places. And all of a sudden, he goes off the radar. He disappears. And no one knows where Terry Runté is. And his writing partner's getting very scared. His family, his parents are getting very nervous. And they start putting out ads and, like, his girlfriend's upset. They start putting out ads and, like, papers. Like, weeks go by until finally they track down somebody who supposedly he had picked up at some point to give a ride home in his sort of larger-than-life, magnanimous party guy way. And that guy fucking killed him.
What?
He murdered him,
Terry
threw
Runté
him into shark-infested waters. His body was never recovered.
Holy
Cops
shit.
Finally went and found his clothes and like his like million-dollar Rolex watch or whatever on the beach,
oh.
which had washed up.
Wait, the guy who killed him didn't even take his Rolex?
No, it was like
That's
like
suspicious.
They said they suspected that it was Terry Runté's big mouth that got him into trouble with this guy. And that, you know, he was probably robbed or whatever, but like the dude admitted it. And the story basically goes cold from there. Like, I was like, so amazed by this.
Wait, when was this?
A year or two after Mario Brothers.
What?
It was immediately after this. Like, this guy who had been, and he was like, he'd been around saying like, boy, like, I hope that my career is not limited to the guy who failed by writing this other dumb movie and Super Mario Brothers. And it was.
Oh,
so
shit.
So the last like article I found from like 92 or 93 or
wow.
whatever was his girlfriend saying, I'm going to go shop Terry's final script to Hollywood because we cannot let his legacy go
the
down
Super
this
Mario
way.
Mario Brothers.
And it was. And that didn't sell. That movie was never made. His writing partner went on to do like very minor like Playboy cartoons or something.
Oh,
like that's
shit.
It. And that's the story of Terry Runté.
Holy crap.
Isn't that fucking nuts?
Yeah, that's really crazy. That's good. That's
and
good
no
stuff.
And like, why isn't this a common thing? This should be fully associated with Super Mario Brothers.
I agree that well there's too much I've learned
there's too much.
Associated with Super Mario Brothers. Just let me just dive in through the Terry Runté lens.
All right.
Because Bennett and Runté are the only two writers brought back on the film. They were rehired, the only team.
Uh-huh.
They were writers number 5 and 6 on the film.
Oh my
God. This movie. So quick. We'll give a. Let me do a plot summary.
Please.
Let me do a plot summary, and then.
Does this movie have the curse of insanity? Like, is there something?
Kalen, you're gonna shit yourself. This movie is brilliant. It's so good because it's so bad, and it's so bad for such obvious reasons. When you start to research what happened.
Okay.
I'll just open by saying, this movie has 9 writers. Uh-huh. And has 5 page one scripts attached to it.
Oh my God.
5 page one scripts, each with their own polishes and revisions.
Uh-huh.
The final shooting script that they went to had 0 white pages left in it. So when you do a revision right. on a script, it's colored pages. And, you know, based on the revision number, you use a different color page. But they said there was 0 white pages. It's just,
right.
And they'd show up in the morning, the directors, I'll get to this, with new revisions. And Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo would just throw them in a drawer. They said, it's going to change by the time we get to the set anyway. Who fucking cares? I'm not reading it. And so they wouldn't read the new pages as they came in. They started drinking. I'm getting all askance, but I'll get to the plot.
You should see Travis right
now. I'm so excited about this movie. John Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins, about 2 weeks into the shoot, decided they fucking hated it. Started drinking scotch between every take. The van scene where John Leguizamo was driving,
oh, yeah.
They called him to set. Hammered. They weren't supposed to shoot that day, so they were drinking scotch in their dressing rooms.
Oh my God.
Like, we gotta shoot this scene. You have to do a stunt driving scene. He was like, what? And Bob Hoskins was like, he's way drunk. And he's like, I'm way drunk. They said, let's just do it. It's fine. So they put him in there. He yoinks the wheel to the right really hard.
Oh, that thing where he's like, I got a good feeling about
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah, that scene. He throws Bob Hoskins against the door. The door slammed on his finger. Shattered his finger. The entire movie, Bob Hoskins is wearing a cast that's painted pink
oh
to match his skin.
God.
Anyway, here's the plot of the film.
Yeah.
So, in a Dan Castellaneta, Castellaneta voiceover, which was added by the studio because they thought no one would understand the plot.
Was the whole opening sequence added?
Yeah, added post.
Incredible.
Yeah. Learn that.
How could.
This gets so good, Kalen. This is like my favorite screenwriting story I've ever heard. So, 60 million years before humans, a meteor strikes the Earth and splits the world into two parallel dimensions. One is, well, in both of those, the dinosaurs exist, but in one, the dinosaurs go extinct and apes become the dominant sort of species, and they mutate into humans, or evolve into humans. In the other parallel world, the dinosaurs don't go extinct, but somehow they also evolve into the same identical humanoid figures for reasons that are not explained. So these two parallel things go in track. And
you, by the way, can I just interrupt to say, you don't, this, it, the opening does not make this clear. All that happens is you see, you hear the Mario music inexplicably over shots of like semi-real.
Is it real? It's 8-bit. Sort of
the
shot.
Theme music.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You're right. It's video gamey. Yeah, you're right. This is the intro. And so then they say, like, you know, Dan Castellaneta is like, as you know, as we all know, like a meteor hit the world and destroyed the dinosaurs. But what if it created another dimension? And what if the dinosaurs were trying to get back? Then the movie starts. So that's all you get. And then, as Travis implies, you meet the bad guys who are just people. Yeah. They're just fucking people. And way into the movie, do you start to have to, like, piece together yourself, like, oh, they're dinosaurs.
Oh, I'm just going to give you the plot because if you do it linearly as the movie does it, it makes zero sense.
Okay.
So Dennis Hopper evolved from a T-Rex. And he's in charge. He plays King Koopa, and he's in charge of this world, which has been eradicated.
King Koopa is elected democratically in this world, by the way.
Yeah, but no one likes him, so it's very confusing.
And his name is King Koopa.
Yeah. So he overthrows the previous king. There was a king. He overthrows the king and deposes him and turns him into what is it?
Fungus.
It's a fungus.
Mushrooms.
A pervading fungus. And this king has a daughter, the princess.
Which is why this alternate dimension has come to be called Mushroom Kingdom. Is it called that?
No, it's called Dino Hatton. I'm not shitting you. I swear to God, it's called Dino Hatton. And the wife of the king has been turned to fungus. Takes the baby and escapes to the alternate dimension to save the baby away from King Koopa, who she knows will kill the baby, leaves her on the step of an orphanage. And by her, I mean a dinosaur egg on the step of an orphanage. Then she goes back and gets killed. Anyway, fast forward, the baby grows up, is born in the orphanage, and the portal to the dimension, to the dimensional crossing where the meteor landed, is in Lower Manhattan, and a rival plumber group has excavated the site, found some dinosaur bones, and unintentionally opened the portal to the alternate dimension. This is the setup to the film about Mario Brothers.
What's blowing my mind about this is you know this movie so much better than I do, only from reading these things. Like,
I made you do the plot.
I could have kind of done this, but it would have been way longer and way more confusing, which is what the movie is like. Travis is giving you the most coherent explanation of what this movie is.
I know that sounds crazy, listeners, but this is the best explanation.
What you're doing is so clean, considering how this movie plays out.
You don't learn most of this till the end of the film. Anyway, so Luigi has a crush on the princess,
who doesn't know she's a princess.
She doesn't know she's a princess. She wears a piece of crystal around her neck that looks like the shard of the Dark Crystal. These henchmen from King Koopa come through the portal and kidnap the princess.
One of them played by Fisher Stevens.
Oh.
And the other played by Richard Edson.
Yeah, Richard Edson, original drummer for Sonic Youth. Fisher Stevens of Brownface fame from Short Circuit. So the Mario Brothers have to jump through this portal to go to Dino Hatton to rescue the princess. That's basically what happens. And then shit goes on from there, but basically they go through these rigmarole. Now, it's important to note for what I'm about to tell you that Dino Hatton looks like Blade Runner. It is not. Now, Mario Brothers, if you've ever played it, is pastels, it's greens, it's blues.
Yeah.
Dino Hatton is dark. In the first 10 minutes after they get to Dino Hatton, someone throws an old woman off of a balcony. It's dark.
We began the intro, as I recall, it's been a few days, but as I recall, we were talking about, like, how could they, who will they try to make a coherent story out of
what are, you know, seemingly intrinsically sort of Japanese sensibility, creative sensibility of kind of abstract ideas, wild imagery, you know, that all, that don't really flow together, but somehow in this sort of particular 8-bit world, it really works and it gels into this wonderful video game experience called Super Mario Brothers. So we were watching this movie, and Travis is going to go into far more detail. And it's a, it is, I'm so glad we asked that question because it's, it was all that was running in my mind is like, how the fuck did they get this from that? And where the application of American ideas versus simple, pure insanity? Like, I it's a way more challenging activity and sort of decoding process than I could have imagined.
Well, the setup is kind of what made me deep dive, is because I wanted desperately to understand how this happened.
Yeah.
I became obsessed with it.
Did you get answers?
No, I have it. I have all the answers.
I'm just going to fucking sit back, really. Because
this
I really am.
I've been dying to call you and tell you this, but I waited to the podcast so I could tell you live.
Fantastic.
So they hire a writer. So anyway, bunch of studios are bidding on the property, the Mario Brothers property, going to like court the head of Nintendo personally. They end up giving it to the guy who directed Killing Fields.
Roland Joffe.
Roland Joffe gets it, right?
He wants it?
He wants it desperately.
What if he didn't want it? They were just like, we want you to have it.
Well, he didn't want to direct it. He wanted to own it because he needed a cash cow to fund his new production company.
Oh, my
God. So Roland Joffe, for $2 million, which is a lowball figure for this property, gets it because he says, we're going to do this justice. And he was an acclaimed director.
The Mission and Killing Fields, yeah.
Yeah. They're like, this guy knows what he's talking about. He flies over personally to talk to the head of Nintendo. He gets the property. And he's not interested. He's never seen this shit. He doesn't know. So he hires a screenwriter, and I forget who the first one was. But they write this beautiful sort of draft based on the game, someone who loved the game. They send it back to Nintendo. They said, no, this isn't Hollywood enough. They hired the guy who wrote Rain Man, who did a beautiful pass, allegedly, that impressed a lot of people, but it was about two estranged brothers, and people thought this is too close to Rain Man, even though it's a beautiful script. It was very hero's journey, he says. It's very sort of metaphorical quest movie about two estranged brothers. They're like, can't do it. Fired him. Then they bring on Bennett.
Is this parallel to casting Dustin Hoffman, or is this all
before? No. We haven't got to casting. This is all... Casting comes in phase three.
All right.
Which is Bennett and Terry Runty,
yeah.
Who write this pretty fun, you know, draft. Like, this fun draft. Nothing like we saw on screen.
Okay.
It's a pretty fun draft, but people like it. It attaches a director. Forget who this was. That director is the one who passes on Dustin Hoffman, and then the producers pass on Tom Hanks, and then Bob Hoskins comes on with this current draft kind of in play. But the director's now dropped out. So they're looking for a director. They can't find a director. We have this third set of writers have come on. It's a decent script. People like it. Okay. They find these creative guys who did Max Headroom and DOA.
Right.
And they bring them on. They think these people are creative. They're dark. These people read the script and they go, allegedly, and this has been confirmed, I guess, by it's a husband-wife team.
Yeah.
And the husband goes to the wife, this could be our Batman.
Sure.
Is what he said to her.
Sure.
And they had this idea about an alternate parallel universe that they desperately wanted to
just make in their own
independently.
Heads. Oh my fucking
God. Now you're starting to see the shape, right?
Yeah.
So they go back to Terry Runty and Bennett, Parker Bennett, and they go, hey, we got this idea. We want you to do this. Now some of the cast, John Leguizamo was already signed on. They said, we want you to do this parallel thing. We have an idea called Dino Hatton. And even though King Koop in the video game is a turtle, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has come out recently, and we can't have another turtle thing, so we're gonna make them lizards. And why not dinosaurs? What if they evolved from dinosaurs?
Oh,
and Parker
God.
Bennett and Terry Runty are like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but sure. So they rewrite the script and they turn it in, and now the financing is in place and stuff, and the producers get the script and they go, what the fuck are you doing? This is dark. And they'd already hired the production designer from Blade Runner. Same guy.
Right, right.
So they already have some of the sets designed now. And they bring in, they fire Parker Bennett and Terry Runty, bring on Ed Solomon and his partner, and band.
And his partner?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ed Solomon's the only one who got credit, but it's his partner also wrote
it. The Bell and Ted guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the producers banned the director team from talking to Ed Solomon during the rewrite. They said, you can't contact him. You don't have his number. You don't have any way of getting...
Because they knew they were the ones who derailed this so hard?
Yeah. So Ed Solomon then turns in this draft that's basically taking the dark Blade Runner-y Dino Hatton version and making it more kid-friendly. So you have two disparate styles now clashing completely.
Mm-hmm.
And then the producer said, you can't rewrite this. Here's your script. You got to shoot this. And the directors were like, we're not doing this. This is crazy. But now all the cast is, they have a shoot date scheduled. The cast is in. God. The financing is in. So under the producer's nose, the directors went and rehired Bennett and Runty and brought them on set. And were like, you got to make this work. So
now they're writing as they're producing the film.
Correct. So now they're writing, when the day comes up, they're writing new scenes to try to make two completely opposite tones work. The directors wanted to do Blade Runner. They wanted to do a dark, you know, Batman, Blade Runner-y alternate world story. And the producers wanted a kids, you know, friendly, pastel-y movie. And what you see is the conflagration of those two ideas coming together. Meanwhile, Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo hate the directors. And they start saying, fuck you. The crew made up shirts that had quotes from the directors dissing the crew. And they wore them on set.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's Blade Runner style, too. They did that on Blade Runner to...
It's fucking amazing.
To Ridley Scott.
So what happens is basically you have all these different voices coming in a very sad, as you can tell from the performances, very sad cast who's uninterested in being there.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Hopper said he didn't know what kind of movie he was making.
Of course not.
Clearly.
Well, how fucking it... I mean, there's a million things to unpack and talk about there. But, like, number one being the directors are so obviously wrong.
Yes.
Like, everything that they would have tried to apply to this movie was wrong. All of it.
Correct.
All of their choices, all of their decisions, if all of that is true, seems to be the bane of this whole film. However, it's so crazy that if it were better and better known, it would not be nearly the sort of fucking thing that it is.
It's
like,
mesmerizing.
There is nothing like this movie. And I mean, it's a real challenge for me because I know we spend a lot of time on the show, or I do anyway, sort of defending stuff that's a little off center, that's a little odd, and sort of saying like, well, the fucking weirdness of it is why it's good. Like, that's where you can invest it. And
did
this
you just
is
do
really
an impression of yourself.
Yeah, I was making
do
fun
a
of
weird
myself.
Impression,
I was making fun of myself because I
know
you I
sound
do
like that, but I didn't know.
I know.
You knew.
I know I do that.
It's weird.
I mean, usually I believe it, but this one is like a hard challenge to that because all of those things are in place that I would normally be like, oh, this is like such a great thing, like that you can really see there, but it's so fucking bug nuts crazy.
I loved it.
Yeah, well, you loved it more than me. I mean, because like I was really like self-aware being like, I'm not liking this, but I sort of should, except that there's no control or intelligence.
Well, you know, when you're watching it,
it's psychotic.
It couldn't have been planned. Like, this is not a wellspring of creativity. There's not ideas being thrown
right
up on screen. There's the sense that you're desperately trying to hold a movie together. And according to a lot of people who were on set and there for rewrites and there for the shooting, everyone was shocked they actually cut a movie out of it. They couldn't believe an actual movie arose out of the mess.
I mean, I get what they're saying. It certainly is not an actual movie.
Like, but the fact that there is even like the semblance of a beginning, a middle, and an end. Like there's a semblance of a film. And the fucking nerve. Okay, so that all happens. Mario and Luigi rescue the princess. They devolve Dennis Hopper back into a T-Rex and then back into primordial slime. Then they evolve the fungus.
God.
It doesn't matter. They evolve the fungus back into the king. A 3-second cameo. What's his name?
Lance Henderson.
Lance Henderson has a 3-second cameo, has one line.
He's in the movie for one shot, period.
Which was filmed much later, by the way. Because they thought, originally there was a scene of the princess talking to the fungus and caressing it and calling it daddy. And they're like, audiences, don't get this. You have to shoot a scene.
Oh,
they thought,
well,
let's get this guy to do this.
By the way, to understand this, you have to understand that a big part of the movie, yet not the principal plot, depends on the concept of rapidly de-evolving or evolving characters. So there's this big machine that Dennis Hopper as King Koopa has built to de-evolve his enemies to dumb lizards, or if he gets a human from the parallel dimension into a monkey. And he's turned that into a gun. So all this time he's been using this big contraption, and basically in a throwaway line, he's like, how's my de-evolution gun coming? And someone's like, yeah, we're done. Like, we got it. And then he now has this thing that he shoots around sometimes. And so, but you have to understand that to understand what they're talking about.
What a remarkable idea as like script glue. They're like, we'll make a gun out of it and
yeah,
I don't know. We'll do it on set. We'll figure it out. But amidst that, you, and this makes sense when you read that the sets had already been built for a different script.
Yeah.
That the sets are pretty extravagant.
Yeah, they really are.
They're really
I was stunned big. When I watched, because we said at the beginning, like, of course it's set contemporary. Of course it's probably set in some dumb Manhattan. And for the first 20 minutes, it is. And I'm like, okay. And then there's a point where they go to the alt dimension. And I'm like, whoa, this place is fucking weird. I didn't know it was called Dino Hatton. But yeah. I was like, this is very elaborate. I'm sure this won't stay. They can't stay here. It's too crazy.
Yeah.
Then the entire movie is them in this place. The whole thing.
What I wanted to say, though, is that the nerve of these directors, at the way the film ends, they come back to Manhattan. And the princess decides to stay behind to take care of her kingdom. Her and John Leguizamo have a very sad sort of parting. They go back to their home, and then in a direct ripoff, I guess it's a ripoff because Back to the Future 2 had come out?
Yeah.
Oh, because yeah, 92. Yeah. So in a direct Back to the Future 2 ripoff, they're standing at the door. The mission's over. There's a knock on the door, and the Princess Daisy is standing there in a tank girl style outfit, yeah, holding a gun, saying, "You got to come back." So these directors were so confident that they were going to get a sequel. They just
but it's incredible the way that it's ripped off, because yeah, so this is way after Back to the Future, you're right. And after Back to the Future 2, in fact. But so the movie's over. There is inexplicably John Leguizamo has to go back home for no reason. He could have easily just stayed in this place with the woman he loves, but he doesn't because he wants to be with his brother. There's no reason. There's no reason. But anyway, so they go back to their dumb apartment in regular Manhattan, our world Manhattan. And then yeah, she shows up, opens the door, and the line is, "You guys got to come with me. You'll never believe what happened." And they go, "What?" And then it cuts to black.
As if anyone cares.
It's the most amazing cliffhanger ever. Because that's it. Yeah. You'll never believe what happened.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah, it's like, great. It's great.
It almost has the quality of satire. Like, it's almost like,
so good.
Could
though.
They get away with this?
Yeah, of course they could. They're fucking geniuses. They. There's also, this will give you some sense of the director sensibilities here. This husband-wife team, who, by the way, every actor interviewed said they would not consult with each other. They just give opposing direction to the actors and walk away.
Amazing.
Of course they did. So there's a nightclub scene because it's the early 90s. It has to have a nightclub scene.
Right.
And Caleb and I both groaned because there's a dance sequence. It's a synchronized dance sequence.
Two.
Walk the Dinosaur.
Yep.
But a remake done by George Clinton, I believe.
Oh, really?
Re-record, yeah. So that was part of the deep dive also.
Again, it's like there are things in this movie that I know, like, look, we're going to explain some of the weird shit in this movie. But when that happened, I don't know if you thought this, but I got caught on, like, so this world has the same music, or did they get Walk the Dinosaur from from 80s our world?
Caleb, like, I spent so much of my brain power watching the film hung up on how the evolution paths would converge in that way that you couldn't tell them apart.
Yeah.
That took so much of my brain power. The reason I went on a deep dive is I was like, I missed a lot of the film really wrestling with this concept that no one on the creative team considered.
So I love it. It's amazing. It is a brilliantly abstract idea that if you just let dinosaurs evolve, they would have become humans.
It's crazy.
And not monkey. And monkeys, which I guess, did they die from? I mean,
don't go down this rabbit hole. So what I wanted to say is, to give you some greater sense of how the directors were thinking, that dance sequence was done day of. Do you know what it was supposed to be?
No.
They were supposed to go into a strip club with strippers. And they had hired the strippers. It was shot in North Carolina. They'd hired a bunch of strippers, local strippers, to come out. They were on set. And the producer showed up. They're like, no, 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 no. This is a kid's film. You can't have strippers
Did
here.
You get – I mean, okay. This could be our Batman. This could be our Blade Runner.
That tells you a lot.
But does it? Because what were they thinking?
They wanted a dark adult film.
They wanted to make the thing called Super Mario Brothers, yes, which they knew what that was. They knew who that was for.
Yeah.
And they just decided this is a good enough vehicle for us to do our spectacular science fiction film.
Yes.
And we're going to go full –
we're going to cram
R-rated?
I don't know if
PG-13,
it was going to be.
Batman style?
They were going to go PG-13, I think. Yeah.
Fuck.
Bob Hoskins didn't know it was a video game movie until after he'd signed the contract. Because fucking Bob Hoskins.
Yeah.
So they asked him later, like 10 years down the line, do you have any regrets about your life? And he said, Super Mario Brothers. And they said, okay, is there anything you wish you'd change? And he goes, Super Mario Brothers. And they said, Is there something that I forget the third question, but he's like Super Mario. Yeah. Like this haunts him as like a terrible thing that he did.
Well, but let's talk about some of the things that I think you could conceivably argue are attributes. I mean, we're talking about sort of loving this. I mean, it really took us by surprise. Like it was a movie that first of all was hard to find. You could not rent it on Amazon,
by the way,
or Vudu. Yep.
Re-release on Blu-ray this year.
Yeah. It's coming?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, we couldn't get it. So we turned to YouTube, and there it is in full HD glory, probably a Blu-ray rip, just sitting there on YouTube. So go sample it. It's free. It's easy. It's right there. But as we watched it, it just jarred the fuck out of us. Like I could feel us both in this, watching this movie, in relative silence. After a while, it shut us the fuck up because we were sort of talking and sort of like goofing around for the first 20 minutes or so when it's just a dumb hijinks movie. And then it was like, wait,
what's
like,
happening?
How many more ideas are they going to pile on? And visually, it's god awful given the spectacular sets, which are very well done. I mean, yeah, they're quite elaborate and cool. It's the world, nearly every shot has sparks. Like the cars travel on a weird electrical, like bumper car electricity grid, so that they have bumper car things sticking out the top that spark on the grid or just spark the top of the cars. So sparks are flying all over the place, constant sparks. And if you don't know how abrasive that is, give this movie a shot. You will see. You'll be like, I can't look at any more fucking sparks. Like,
there's a lot of sparks. Also, all the guns seem to shoot sparks off sometimes.
Or every gun shoots, like, okay, how are they going to incorporate fireballs? We asked. Well, every gun shoots fireballs.
Although, every gun is a flamethrower, and then they cut to a shot of a fireball, yeah, which doesn't ever make sense.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
never, ever looks like a fireball is
no,
coming
no, no.
out of a gun.
It's true. Yeah,
it's a flamethrower, and they cut to a fireball.
Yeah.
This is a minor thing to quibble with, but it's something that bugged me.
Well,
quite
the
a bit.
Incorporation of elements from the video game fascinated me because they were both half-hearted and insane.
Here's the most insane. In the strip club / dance club, Bob Hoskins has a pretty PG-13 encounter with an African-American woman wearing a tight red dress who has stolen earlier in the film. She punches Bob Hoskins and takes the crystal. Which is just, you're also half-heartedly tracing and chasing this crystal throughout the film. Because that's the key to opening the portal again or whatever. Merging the two dimensions so that King Koopa can take over.
Which I truly didn't understand.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, the ostensible plot of the film is King Koopa wants to merge the two dimensions back together again and then rule over both of them for some reason. And they have to get this shard of a crystal
sword.
It doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, but this is what are we gonna do? This is what the movie is. Like, there's a lot of Dennis Hopper ranting about how the other dimension has all the resources, and they have to rely on this, like, soup, like this weird pea stew looking stuff.
Yeah, but
for
very...
all the, but it doesn't that doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't factor. It's not like a thing that matters or that does anything. It's just what he says. He's angry.
Importantly, all the actors signed on willingly to a script they thought was very good. And that's important.
Now, I'm being very serious. I would gladly read any number of drafts
of
this thing.
Well, you're in luck. They're online.
Did you read any?
I haven't yet, but I fully plan on it.
Oh, boy.
The previous drafts are to be found online. And the actress who plays the sort of female henchman of King Koopa showed up the day they're supposed to sit in that mud bath.
Right.
And she said something to the effect on set in front of everybody. I signed on to a really nuanced, brilliant script, and now I'm about to sit in 3,000 gallons of mud filled with $9,000 worth of worms. Apparently there were worms in that mud. Yeah, there was worms in that whole mud bath that we barely saw.
We never saw the worms.
So...
Which, by the way, an immortal Dennis Hopper line where he goes, you know why I like mud? Because it's so clean and it's so dirty at the same time or something. Great. Solid. Yeah. Good stuff.
He's doing it.
He does have, I gotta say, great hair.
Great hair.
Great hair.
Dino hair.
Yeah.
They gave
dinosaur
him like,
hair.
Like,
it's great. It's really good.
Like Stegosaurus hair. What I wanted to say is that in the most egregious ramming together of video game elements with the real world, so you're in a nightclub. Bob Hoskins has a seductive dance with this woman in a red dress whose name is Bertha. And as you know from the video game, the bright red fish that you have to fight off is called Bertha.
What?
And so that is that reference is they've dressed her in red and made her look that way with the sort of stitched up gill like looking things because it's supposed to be Big Bertha from the video game.
I can't believe that.
Isn't that stunning?
That is incredible.
Stunning.
I mean, the ones I didn't know that. The ones that that are obvious is they put Yoshi in. He's just a dinosaur.
By the way, this comes out 2 months before Jurassic Park. It's important to know. Yeah. For CGI purposes and for culture purposes.
Well, I was interested in the CGI. There's actually almost no CGI.
Yeah.
There's only a couple
of animatronic
shots.
Stuff.
There right. was a lot of puppets, which yeah. looked pretty good. Yeah. Yoshi looked pretty good, I guess, as a puppet. I mean, that's certainly not a reason to watch the movie.
By the way, in terms of Yoshi, kids movie, Yoshi gets stabbed by the princess. Stabbed with a knife or a crystal. That's right. And it's very, it's not played for laughs. Yeah, yeah. It's dark.
Well, and the character, what I was going to build to is that I found it to be actually a truly disturbing concept. Is this de-evolution thing? So there's a character who is a... This is amazing. This is fucking amazing. This movie's incredible.
I'm into
there is
it.
A folk singer protest artist who is singing folk songs on the street about anti-Koopa in this alternate dimension.
I can't believe there's so many ideas in this movie.
And he knows... He's like familiar with some of the characters in the film, and so he at some point they pick him up off the street for singing anti-Koopa music, and at the same time they're picking up the Mario Brothers. So then they take him, and to punish him, and Koopa wants the Mario Brothers to see this, they're going to strap him into this chair and put him in the de-evolution machine. And up until now you've seen all these bizarrely designed giant body, maybe if you've seen the film you know this, these giant bodies with tiny little dinosaur puppet heads that are the bad Goombas. Guys. They're the Goombas.
Yeah.
But they're dinosaurs. They don't look like Goombas.
Also,
anyway.
If that's the outfit, why don't they make outfits that suit their neck a little better?
Well, why is their body so big?
I don't know, Kayla.
So this guy is a normal guy. He's like I guess he's a dinosaur underneath it all, but he's just a guy, this folk singer. So they put him in the machine, and he backs up, and then they put this fucking helmet thing on him and, like, zap him, and he goes like he's all fucked up. And then he comes out with this gigantic body, this tiny dino head, and he's scary dumb. Yeah. Like, it really freaked me out.
Yeah,
because
it disturbed me.
I'm not being insensitive, but it's they turn him into a pinhead, like from Freaks. Like he's the, you know, that whatever, that microcephalia or whatever. They turn him into that. He has a weird grin. He's like, and he's docile and he'll do whatever they want. It's truly disturbing.
It's disturbing.
It's really
Galen's is. Galen's being serious. It's rattling.
Yeah.
I would hazard a guess of saying it's one of the most disturbing things in the film.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of disturbing
totally.
Things.
Totally. And that's true. And it is the most, including this testicle descent fungus dad, which we'll get to later.
Testicle descent.
That's what it reminded me.
Dad.
It looked like the Cremaster
You're right.
muscle of
You're
dropping.
You're 100% right.
Anyway, so that character, that guy who they did that to, that's Toad. You discover
can
they're
you,
like, oh,
can
that
you guys
was
believe
Toad.
That Toad from the Super Mario Brothers 3. I think he's first introduced, right?
Maybe earlier.
Two. That's how they went. Toad was
a little mushroom
human,
hat, cute
wait,
little guy.
A human, yeah. In the video game, he's a small little mushroom. He's a mushroom.
Yeah.
Basically,
he's an anthropomorphic mushroom who's
yeah.
very cute, and he goes like, woohoo, in like fun
yeah.
games.
And he's
stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And in the movie, it's a man evolved from dinosaurs who's a street musician who gets devolved into a Goomba. So think about that.
Who's really dumb, who's like lost his brain. He's like lost his intelligence.
And the only reason you know it's Toad is that they call him Toad.
Yeah, then they call him Toad.
Hey, Toad. You're like, oh, I guess that's Toad.
Yeah. Can we talk about those Goombas?
Yeah. Because
there's this, they're very gross. They're scary gross to me
the whole
time. And there's a scene that is the most, it's meant to be the most overtly comic scene. And I remember as a little kid, people describing this scene to me and then being like, it's so funny. Like there were people who talked about this film and they were like, this is a really funny scene. And me hearing it, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. It is too, what you're describing is too confusing to me and I can't get my head around it. And it was fucking mind blowing 20 plus years later, 25 years later, whatever, to see this scene and be like, what? Like, that's what they were talking about. So here's the scene. They're Mario and Luigi are sneaking into the Koopa's castle, which is the World Trade Center, inexplicably and scarily. It's very weird. And they are in an elevator that is slowly filling up with these hulking
tiny-headed Goombas characters.
Also, the street layouts are the same as Manhattan.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah.
Never understood that.
Yeah. No, none of it makes sense. And so then elevator music comes on, and they're like, Mario's like to Luigi, how are we going to get out of this, Luigi? And Luigi's like, don't worry, I got an idea. And so then there's no setup for this.
This is where Kaylin and I kind of lost it, I think, watching it.
Then, so Luigi takes the hips of one of these giant Goombas.
Puts one hand on either side of the hips.
And starts swaying back and forth. And you don't know what's going on. But then you realize, oh, he's moving him to the music, I guess. So then he does that to one. Then he goes and does it to, there's like, let's say there's nine of them in the elevator. He does it to a second one. Then he does it to a third one. Then he does it to a fourth one. He does it to every single one of them in the elevator. And we're cutting away from this fucking scene. Like, we're going to check up on other stories because this movie is a tapestry. And so then, and finally, we keep returning to this elevator where he's still doing this to these guys. And you're like, what the fuck is he doing? And then finally, the payoff, I guess, is that they turn toward each other and start dancing with each other.
Yeah,
slow dancing to the elevator music. And then the door opens and Mario and Luigi sneak out. And then someone else, another Goomba guy, is like, what's going on here? And they're like, ah. Yeah. And that's the whole scene.
Yeah,
and
it's like, really funny.
And it's like, what? It's Jacob's Ladder scary to me. Like, it was like, what is, there's, this is tipping into the uncanny where this can't be true. It can't be real.
Yeah.
It's really scary that this anti-demented demon logic is playing out before my eyes. And I'm supposed to think it's funny.
What had to have happened?
I fucking can't get over this scene.
No, I'm with you. Well, we had settled into silence. We're watching the film at this point. This is the one part of the movie I spoke up on. I was like, I can't believe that's how they got out of that. Like, I can't, because
what idea is that?
No, it has to be. I thought a lot about this scene too. I think it had to be. They had shot the scene where they're in the elevator. And then, like, whatever idea we had to get him out is not going to work. We have to do something that costs zero money that we can film in 20 minutes. Who's got an idea? And someone was like,
Terry Runte?
Yeah, Terry Runte was like, hey, one time I was in the elevator with nine broads in the Bahamas, and I started dancing with all of them. And she was like, done. The director's like, cool, let's just do that. Like, it has to be what happened, right? Yeah. Like,
just made up on the fly.
It has to have been. Yeah. And it has to be something they had to have said, we're out of budget. And we have no time left. So what can we film quickly? I have to imagine, because that's not an idea anyone comes up with not on set.
I'm like, it's not an idea anyone comes up with.
No, I agree.
Like,
with
maybe you're right. Maybe they had like piping in elevator music. And yeah. They were like, what do we got? What do we got? Fuck, we were shooting this in 10 minutes. What the fuck? Okay, well, there's music. We have that. That's an element. We have, you know, and then they sort of, finally slam this thing together. It is, but it is really, it is really scary.
Also, yeah, it is. Watching Fisher Stevens try to make jokes.
Oh, Jesus Christ. There's no way to stop talking about this movie.
No, I want to talk forever. I figured something else out. I didn't figure it out. I read it, but it was something that confused me. Uh-huh. So, Iggy and, I forget the other character's name, but Koopa's henchmen.
They're his fucking kids or whatever?
Yeah, but which is fine. They call him that in the movie. But anyway, the Fisher Stevens and the other guy are this henchman duo that just does really, really unfunny physical comedy for the first 45 minutes of the film.
Not just physical comedy, and yeah, verbal, deeply unfunny, long-winded, like, verbal back and forth. Like, they're supposed to be, you know, the goofus twosome, you know, like, they're supposed to be this really, you know, that classic trope.
You're going to try to get away with that. You're going to try to blow past the phrase goofus twosome.
Well, I think that's right. I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah.
I mean, we all talk about the goofus
twosome.
Yeah,
they're trying to be the goofy
guys. You
remember
when Abbott Costello invented the goofus twosome?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess it would be Laurel and Hardy. But they're totally unfunny. Wait, what's the guy? Oh, Richard Edson. So,
yeah.
So you know these guys, like Fisher Stevens, obviously we talked about. Richard Edson's the guy who you all know from, if you've seen Stranger Than Paradise, he's like the main character in that. He's one of Jim Jarmusch's guys. And then he's also the car garage mechanic who steals Cameron's car in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Great.
He's got this sort of flat, you know, big, cool.
Yeah, he's a character actor guy. He's been around.
Yeah, he's good. And they're, so, but very quickly, I'm sorry, I know you were going somewhere,
but
just real quick, their gag is that they get evolved, which changes their appearance not at all, and just makes them speak big words. That's their joke about intelligence.
But they're still dumb.
They're still dumb.
They still fuck up everything. Yeah. Yeah. They just use words like, oh, what a conundrum where we found ourselves in.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
That's the whole joke.
They use bigger words, but they're just as dumb.
Oh, man. Do you remember that they're the bad guys, right?
Here's what I want to talk about.
Go for it.
Wait, set it up for the audience. Yes.
Oh, well, here's what I was going to say, is that they're the bad guys. They're Koopa's henchmen. And then a million years into this movie, they suddenly start siding with the good guys. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, we were secret agents. We were like double agents. And we've been working against him this whole time.
Yeah.
But they're the guys who kidnapped the princess, brought her to the alt dimension. They're the guys who were like shooting up at Mario and Luigi. Everything they've done, and even when they're by themselves together, is clearly evil.
Yeah.
And so go for it.
Here's why.
Fuck, man.
Because I also had to figure this out. Because I was like, this is
can't believe there's an answer, and you found it.
No, there's an answer. It's a glaringly huge, in a movie full of crazy plot holes, this, watching it, feels like one of the largest. So here's what happens. So Koopa's got his henchmen. They've been with him his whole life. They are doofuses. They're the goofus twosome. And they go off. They fuck up kidnapping the princess. All this shit goes wrong. The movie goes on. And to punish them, he's going to put them in the de-evolution machine. And they go, no, 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 no. But what he's really doing, what Koopa's really doing, is he's like, I have to make you guys smarter. You guys are too fucking dumb.
Yeah.
I'm going to, after 30 years.
Yeah, why he hasn't done
after
this.
After 30 years of putting up with your bullshit, of you being fucking idiots, I'm going to make you smart finally. And they're like, no, don't do this to us. So he makes them smart. They start speaking really eloquently, whatever. What unintentionally he's done, he's made them smart enough to see that he's the bad guy and she's the good guy. So the reason they shift allegiances is that they're now smart enough to realize that the Mario brothers are the good guys and they should be helping them.
Here's my
question.
That's
how the movie
answers.
Here's
my question. Why did you have to research that? That, like, how hard is it to write that line? Like, it would be terrible, but I realized we're smart enough that you're the good guys and he's the bad guy, so now we're on the good guy's side. How hard is it to just write that line? It's not in the movie. Yeah. None of what you just said has any root or context in the film.
Correct. I had to look that up. I had to look it up. I was like, why do these guys do this? Oh, so there's an answer for it. It just doesn't make any sense. And they probably forgot to film it. I mean, when I say, like, everyone seems to suggest that they were day of scrambling to use sets that had been built and try to make sense of this thing. Again, coming off of a script that had been approved by everyone
involved.
Sounds
like multiple scripts that people enjoyed.
Yeah. I mean, people were into it. People liked it. 9 writers, 5 drafts, draft 3 or 4. People get signed on. Actors come on board.
You know, this is great. This is really interesting to me because I've worked in this industry for a while, and producers are perfectly smart people most of the time, lots of the time. They have good intentions. But I've never encountered a narrative where the director was so fucking horrible.
It's what makes it great. And it's what makes this movie stick
and
out.
And the movie sucked. Like, you'll have people defend, like, Heaven's Gate or whatever and say, like, well, Cimino, yeah, he went overboard, but what a good movie. It's a secret underrated masterpiece. Even Ishtar, they're like, yeah, but Elaine May, you know, that Elaine May, even though she overshot and she overspent, like, there's some real good quality in there. We are primed to fight for the director. This case, these two are fucking knucklehead idiots.
Never got work again. Yeah. Never worked again in the industry.
Oh my God.
But the reason I think it stands out is that because you had, it was just a perfect storm. This could never happen again, I don't think. Where you had Nintendo, the Nintendo people wanted to use this. They had all these big ideas for how this might work out. And it had been pitched to them when they got optioned as, we'll do a prequel to the video game and then you'll do a sequel, and then we'll piggyback and we'll do this whole interactive feeding each other thing. They had all these ideas about how it would work. The Nintendo people were sold on it. They had some creative oversight on the script. The studio that bought it, Roland Jaffe and those guys, had some creative control also. Then they had writers come on board, and then they had multiple scripts, and then they had 3 directors come on board. And so all these voices get mixed, and people get confused. Then they have a release date, which got pushed back
already.
And then
they have a case where nobody's firing anybody, nobody's shutting it down. They just keep going. And that I've also observed, is that when things are starting, you can't stop the machine. There's too many employees. There's too much on the line. You would lose too much money. Your investors are counting on it, especially when you have an entity like Nintendo. Like, you've got to deliver. This shit is going to happen.
And it's been announced.
Yeah. I mean, that's fucking amazing. This is a really cool and interesting model of, like, how movies go.
Guess
so
who got locked out
wrong
of the edit?
The directors.
Yeah. They weren't allowed in the edit bay. It's great. I mean, everything about it's great. Oh, everything about this movie is awesome and great, and the story behind it is awesome.
Oh,
and great.
For real.
Hey, listeners, if you're interested in this, please Google this. There's so many long articles written by people had the same questions we did, which was like, how the fuck did this happen? This seems impossible. And so they went and wrote them. Some of them came out around the time of the filming of the movie, and they're interviewing people on set.
Oh,
and
boy.
During the filming, they were talking to Bob Hoskins, and they said, well, the directors refused to talk to us for this interview during the filming. And Bob Hoskins goes, that's the first smart decision they've made. Well, this is before the movie even comes out. Like, they all hate each other already.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I think go watch this movie, honestly.
For sure. Can I ask you one more question before we wrap up? Did I forget? Why? What good is it if you eat a mushroom? Do they ever eat mushrooms?
He never eats the mushroom.
So here's the thing. I was thinking that too.
I forgot.
So there's this fungus.
They tease it four times.
Yeah, this king fungus who turns into Lance Henriksen, who looks like a descending testicle.
That sentence is
it's true. Great. It's all true. And it's really gross, like slimy and disgusting. Not slimy in a fun way, slimy in a disgusting way. And throughout the whole film, as they're running around Dino Hatton, there's this fungus spreading around, and it keeps dripping mushrooms toward Luigi. And Luigi keeps being like, this fungus is trying to give me this mushroom. And Mario's like, come on, what are you, stupid? Let's go. And then but it keeps dropping. By the way, they're good. These guys would have been a great Mario Luigi.
They're great.
They like, they're for real. Great. Like, their lines are horrible. Yeah. They're great. They would have been great.
I completely agree.
And even though they're not interested, you can tell, they're good picks. Yeah. Like, I can't argue.
All the reviews seem to pick them out. Guess who gave a positive review? Janet Maslin. Figure that one out. Go on.
So anyway, so this happens over and over again where Luigi's like, I think this fungus is trying to give us this mushroom. So is it possible that they figured, well, we didn't get to the mushrooms this time. But are they setting it up for the future?
I don't think anyone thought that far about
that. They were just like, we got to have fucking mushrooms. Probably if they ate them, you can imagine in your head they'd get big.
Yeah, but they did pay off I wonder I wonder if it's in the script and they just cut it and didn't get to it. That's possible. It was over budget.
Why would they keep in the edit that they keeps giving them mushrooms?
It's unclear. But they did put in the bob-ombs.
Oh, yeah.
Which also is given to them by the
bizarre scene.
By the fungus.
Oh, you're right. The fungus drops the thing called a ba-bomb, which I guess is from the video game,
which actually looks just like the video game.
Yeah, but which everybody knows what it is. Like there's this terrible menace called the ba-bombs, which have happy smile faces that just wander around the town sometimes. Like, a guy driving in a car slams on his brakes when he sees a wind-up ba-bomb. Again, sparking, because you can't have too many sparks in this movie.
A lot of sparks in the movie.
And he goes, ba-bomb! And he quickly turns his car around and drives away before this thing explodes and destroys something. I can't even remember what.
It knocks King Koopa off his platform.
Cool.
Also, imagine a kid's film. We can do this forever, so we should wrap up. But imagine a kid's film. You take your kids to go see a movie about a video game that they love. And they're 8. They're 9. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you have some pretty adult sort of flirtation between John Leguizamo and the princess. You think, okay, cool. They're setting up a thing. Then you get a granny thrown off a balcony. Then you get Dennis Hopper full on blue velveting this Daisy girl, sticking his tongue out saying, hey, you know what they say about kissing lizards?
Right. Yeah,
what the,
it's all,
what's happening?
And it really is horrendous to look at. Like, it's not that there was bad work done on the set or prop side or whatever, but that they can't shoot. They don't know how to shoot. And it's incoherent to look at. And surely it was all, you know, stitched together and taped together in the edit or whatever, but it's a ghastly, ghastly looking film.
This is their Batman.
Yeah. Well, I agree. Go watch it. If not for us, then for the legacy of Terry Runté,
Terry Runté.
I mean, look that story up.
I'm gonna go look that one up. Also, read everything you can. There's lots of great, like, 30-minute documentaries about this movie out that are all awesome because they have interviews with the cast and crew.
Wow!
And
it's fucking rad. Wow!
One last thing.
Sure.
The director walked up to the extras. This is the male director, the husband, and he apparently his vision was it was a Blade Runner-y, dark, dystopic environment where everyone was dirty, and one of the extras was too clean, and so the director took his cup of coffee and threw it on the extra, who was wearing a plastic mask, and it burnt the extra. And according to multiple witnesses, as he walked away, he goes, "Who cares? It's just an extra."
Jesus Christ, this guy.
That rules.
Wow. Can I ask you one last? I know. I'm sorry.
I could talk about this.
This
movie
is just
for
a question.
Hours. Yeah.
I'm curious, given what we've seen from the film and all these stories that you've now told, do you think that the directors, when did they think it was a bad movie? Did they only think that when they got like the edit taken away? Like, were they like, no, stop fucking with us. Like, just let us make our masterpiece. When did they realize it had gone horribly wrong?
They're conspicuously absent from the articles. Mm-hmm. They seem to have done no press or interviews about the film. I would guess 4 weeks into shooting.
They thought, we have a disaster.
This is my guess.
So you think they knew?
I think they knew. But again, they were clearly out of time to shoot things necessary for the plot. Right. We've isolated a few of those in this conversation. And they made time to film that dumb Daisy scene at the end, promising a sequel. So I don't know what the fuck they
were. Wow.
Anyway, all right, let's move on. Go watch it, guys.
Yeah,
it's a great nostalgia film.
You will not be sorry.
It'll also make you... Did Bob Hoskins do a lot of stuff past that?
Hoskins? Oh, hell yeah. Lots of stuff.
What's his big ones after that?
Well, he did a lot of great movies. I mean, he was maybe not American films. Okay. Maybe his like big budget American days were over.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Good actor.
Which one?
Well, Felicia's Journey. Which is way later. He did a million great things, man. He worked with whatever.
We're segueing to a great movie.
Really?
Are you ready for this?
Now here. Yes, I'm ready.
Tell me.
We may have a guest on next week.
Well, he or she's very lucky.
Okay. Wonderful.
Because we're gonna be watching the film Beetlejuice.
Oh, wow.
Kind of a good
curiously appropriate.
Yep. Well, join us next week to see if Beetlejuice sucks on
Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?